This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test.
Look, before we start this episode of the James McMahon Music Podcast, I need to tell you something. I need your help. I need you, when you finish with the episode, to go to the platform you've listened to this podcast on and give me a rating, a review, and to subscribe too. It helps me cheat the algorithm and get more ears on the podcast. And know this, I'm very grateful for it. Also, I have a Substack where I write about music and film and telly and all sorts of stuff. I love it if you sign up for Dispatches. There are different price options, £5 a month, £50 a year, and for that, you get access to loads of exclusive writing and podcasts. It's the most helpful thing you can do to support the stuff I make. And again, I'd be so grateful. That's spook.substack.com. That's spook with three O's. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you.
We thank Jesus.
This concludes this test of the emergency broadcast system.
Oh, shit. You're listening to a bonus episode of the James McMahon Music Podcast. And I'm your host, James McMahon. And this is a Spook Media production.
One day I carried 30 pounds of wood a distance of 5 miles. Another day, while hiding in the forest, I covered my eyes with makeup to see how they'd come out.
Sorry for the lack of episodes this last week. I normally try to get a handful of episodes up in the time since we last spoke. But I've been busy finishing my book. And I've been quite ill as well, but I'm on the mend now. The book's reading well, and I'm so very excited to share it with you. But for now, here's a bonus episode of the podcast. A bonus episode because the audio is a bit scratchier than I would bring you on a regular episode. And it's with the great Ulrika Spacek, the guitarist and vocalist of whom, that would be Rhys Edwards, I spoke to a few weeks ago on the eve of the release of his band's third record, the excellent Compact Trauma, out now on Tough Love Records. I'll be back with a few more episodes this week, all being well, but for now, settle down and settle in for a pretty fun episode, I think. Are you in Dalston?
I'm currently in Stockholm, actually.
Oh, God.
Okay. But we lived in together in Homerton for many years.
All right. So you're based in Stockholm now?
I am, yeah.
Oh, for the, what's that
for the love? It's snowy right now. just really waiting for spring, to be honest.
Coldest place I ever went was Stockholm.
Was it? I assume you went in wintertime then.
Oh, God. It was really early on being a music journalist. And I used to write for Metal Hammer magazine. And there was this glorious, stroke weird period of my life where they would just send me to Scandinavia like every week, like twice a week, to like interview like people in corpse paint.
Wow.
It was fun, but I mean, it's weird. Like, it's not really the kind of music that I like. So,
well, they're quite connoisseurs here, right?
Absolutely, you know. So, and I love, you know, I love Sweden, Finland. You know, I'm trying to remember names of other places in Scandinavia, but I love, you know, I love that part of the world. But it was weird, but I was so young and like so naive that I didn't. And also, I'm from up north, right? So we don't feel the cold. So it took me a while to realize just how cold it was. And
yeah, it's certainly strange. I mean, I think when it's around 0 degrees and wet and 1 degree, I mean, this is really the worst. When it's like -5 or something, as long as you protect your skin from the, you know, if you wrap up, then you can kind of hide away from it.
I mean, you've absolutely... You've ruined how I was going to start this conversation, by the way, because I used to live in Dalston, and I lived there for years, and I very rarely get back now. So I was going to ask you what Dalston was like now.
Well, we never lived in Dalston. We lived in Homerton. But, I mean, we did spend a lot of time in Dalston, of course.
I mean,
but
Homerton and Dalston's sort of much of a muchness, though, right?
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we kind of just stayed in the house a lot. But as you know, lots of people move. I mean, we lost our house, and most people moved to Leighton and Walthamstow, and I just happened to go a bit further. It wasn't really that planned, but
so I'm in Leighton. That's where I'm based now. But I hear that people move out to Leighton, but I've been there 10 years, but I haven't really felt the shift. You know, I haven't really felt the brain drain from Dalston to Leighton.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens, isn't it, when you live in a shared house, everybody kind of scatters trying to find a room, and they end up going to different places. And in London, sometimes you can get a bit, you know, disconnected. You have to work a lot. And yeah, I know it's hard to see people sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like being an adult in London is just making plans and then cancelling them and then making them again and then cancelling them. Yeah. Well, this shared house, was this Ken?
That's right, yeah.
Why was it Ken?
So, I mean, it was a regular kind of shared house. It was a 4-bedroom house that we had 8 people in at the height of it.
Right.
One of the tenants before us actually did rip up all of the laminate flooring in the living room and made an art gallery and called it the Ken Gallery. So I think it operated for a couple of months until the landlord found out and then kicked them out.
Where in Dalston was it?
As I said, it was just at the end of
Homerton.
Yeah, at the end of Wells Street. So it was on Kenton Road. So I think that's maybe where Ken, well, obviously where Ken came from, I guess.
Ah, right. Well, that's that mystery solved, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was a weird, I don't know, it was weird, man. Like, kind of knocking about around there. I mean, during that period of time, I was working at the NME, so it was kind of weird because it felt like half the people you were writing about like lived in adjacent streets. So you'd see like Claxons and New Young Pony Club walking about and all this sort of stuff. But at the same time, I never really, I don't know. I mean, I did like it. It was a cool place to be, but I always felt like crushingly uncool. But I wonder, you never know what's going on in people's heads. Maybe Claxons felt like that as well.
Well, I think you just keep to yourself and do your own thing, right? That's always the best way.
Yeah, no, I've come to realize that. But how does being in Stockholm affect rehearsing and recording and all that sort of jazz?
I mean, I'm back nearly every month, to be honest, at the moment with the band. So we've been, I mean, it feels like we've been away, but really, you know, we were working very hard on this album for the last 4 years. I think obviously Corona made a little bit of a problem because there was definitely like nearly a year where we couldn't really meet up so much. But it kind of works. I mean, I'm quite, from a personal point of view, I feel quite blessed really that I can still feel so connected to London. But when I step out and come back here, like I feel like a new sense of spring in my step. You know, I think Stockholm can be very depressing if you're stuck here and not really going anywhere else, because you do feel a little bit far north and off the grid a bit. But that can also be good for artistry and, you know, writing music, I think.
I mean, you say it was, you've been making this, working on this record for 4 years. I mean, it does feel like you've been away forever. But then I also think that, you know, this, if we sort of say the pandemic was really 2 years, I mean, I sort of feel like those 2 years maybe felt like twice as long as that. So
yeah.
So maybe that kind of adds to you being away for so long. But what, was it the pandemic that just stopped you following up the last record?
No, we had the wheels had come off a little bit before then. I mean, essentially, I would say we started the record in 2018 and made very good progress. We were happy with it. And I think it got to a kind of a 75% done level. And when I look back at that time as well, you know, I think we were under a bit of pressure with, you know, the other records weren't big enough that like we could take a break. So you have this kind of pressure all the time now where it's like you have to do an album a year to be able to go on the road. And I think we did an American tour, which I think maybe it's a cliche that a lot of bands split up in America, because by the time you make it out there, you know, you have really been on the road for 2 years often. And basically we were kind of content with the record, but it just didn't feel like it was at the level that we wanted it. Not everybody in the band wanted to do music anymore. And we didn't know whether that was forever. You know, there was a few addiction problems in the band and we really needed to take a pause. And then I guess where the pandemic didn't really help is when we kind of were ready to maybe work on it again, suddenly we weren't able to be in the same room. So I would say that last 25% was done, you know, by talking to each other again on Zoom and sending WAVs and stuff. And I think, to be honest, I think when you get too close to a record, you know, you can lose sight. And after, you know, maybe it was a year of inactivity, I would say, when you opened up the record again, it was just so easy to like be detached and just take away the bits that you weren't so keen on and keep all of the bits you liked and build from there. And I have to say that was, I'm really glad that happened, because there would have been pressure maybe to put the record out when we were maybe thinking it was 75% done, and it just wouldn't have been as good as it should be. And we wouldn't have even been able to tour it anyway, because Corona was just around the corner, which we didn't know.
I mean, it's I find myself that when I start projects and don't see them through, and then when I return to them at a later date, sometimes it blows my mind just how different my mindset is when I finally get back to it. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, it's almost like easier to start again than to try to salvage and take something from where you'd been before. It sounds a little bit similar in a way that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you in the sense that, you know, there's so many half ideas that, you know, I and we have, and you open them up after a while sometimes and you're like, what was I thinking? So it doesn't always work, but it was this time, I have to say, it just felt fresh. And even though, you know, the record in many ways has its heart in 2018, it feels kind of fresh to me now, but that's probably because I haven't listened to it for a while.
Yeah, I also think as well, just the speed of life now as well, like someone said, what we were saying about the pandemic feeling longer than it maybe actually was, but you know, 2018, that just feels like the dark ages or something.
Yeah, you're right, you're perhaps true. Yeah.
You were saying about some of the members not sure they wanted to make music anymore. Was that other Rhys?
That's right, yeah.
I mean, you were at school with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, many of the members we went to school with. Joe was at school with us. Ben, who played bass with us on the first two albums, he was at school with us as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess we do have a deep roots in our childhood.
But have you managed to, I mean, are those still friendships, you know?
Oh, of course. Yeah, very much.
Right.
Yeah, that's not disputed. But I mean, when someone doesn't want to do music anymore, you know, you can kind of wait for them for a while. But it just, yeah, I mean, we see what happens. We haven't started writing the next record. So,
right.
And he worked on the record with us. I think maybe the idea of going on tour and doing it all again, I can understand why that can be, yeah, intimidating or not something you maybe want to do.
Yeah, no, it's I can see that. Tell me about Oysterland. I find I don't know. I've never been to a night, but I felt quite inspired reading the testimonials of people who had been to a night.
Well, I think when we started the band, we just didn't want to just take support slots we just wanted to start our own night from the start, really. And I think we noticed. I mean, as you said about living in Dalston or Hackney, like there was a hell of a lot of talented people around us who were working as artists that maybe don't have that stage that a band has. You know, it's not hard to get a gig, but you know, if you're a painter, it's kind of hard to find a place to exhibit your work. So it was just kind of supporting friends around us who did interesting things. And we took over a pub that had seen better days, you know, like most pubs in London, they kind of go in waves. And it was just nice from the start to build something that was our identity. And yeah, it's a lot of happy memories of that period.
You've got some more nights coming up though, right?
Yeah, so we still do it. Like I think now that we're going to be touring, it's going to be a bit more conventional, obviously. But yeah, the last few months we've been doing nights again. Yeah, and we hope that we can do it, you know, continue in the future in different cities, really.
I mean, I tell you something I always find interesting is that bands that, like, I totally get like the mindset that you've just described, and you know, I know there's lots of bands that I like that kind of start off doing very interesting things, and then you kind of you almost kind of get into the slog of it, and it's kind of hard to kind of keep that up. Like, have you found that at all? Or, I mean, can you see yourself continuing to do almost like these sort of communal art projects the further you get into?
Well, I think, I mean, there's like a bit of an inside joke in the band, really, that somehow, even though we have a bigger audience and, you know, there is more money, potentially with fees and stuff, we still find a way of not making any money because of the ideas we want to do, right. Which is kind of like a dark humor in the whole thing. But look, I think this is also maybe why we took a break, really, because I think, as I said, when the wheels get turning on an album campaign, you can kind of lose, everything just goes too fast. So, and I think, you know, when it comes to quality control, I think we are pretty on the ball, really. And hence why we think about things. I'd like to think that anyway.
Yeah, there's a band that I've kind of followed all the way through called the Futureheads, who used to be, they're some of my best friends, but like when they started out, like they would, you know, their first tour was of Squats, and they sometimes you'd go see them play and they just wouldn't have brought any of their instruments, but they would be like miming, sort of almost like a sort of 90s boy band or something. And they were just like amazing memories. But then obviously when you kind of, you know, when they signed a, you know, major record deal and became like a relatively big band, and I don't know, it's like, as I understand that shift, but I also kind of miss those days, really. So I guess that when I was reading about the way that your band did things, I was thinking, I really hope they continue just kind of not doing things in an obvious way.
Well, luckily for us, I mean, we work with, you know, our label and our management. Like, we are an indie band in the truest sense of the word, really. Like, we do everything ourselves. And kind of the idea of not doing that is a bit terrifying, really. I mean, I think some bands obviously just, when things get overwhelming, they just let go and let the industry take, because it is very much like a train that once it starts going, and in the same way that when some members of the band have left, you know, it's been described a bit like a train is going and it's like there's a stop coming and you're having a panic attack and you've just got to jump off when the doors open.
This is such a job interview question, but what does success look like to you?
Well, I wish I was more profound, but I'm gonna quote Leonard Cohen, which is survival, really. I mean, if success is if you can keep doing what you want to do and express yourself in a way that you feel content as an artist.
Is that Leonard Cohen?
Yeah, it's philosophy. It's on one documentary I saw. I just thought it was a very beautiful. I mean, he was very successful at the time as well, but I thought it was really poetic and. Yeah, I took it to heart.
I think I've arrived at that point, but I also sometimes feel like, I don't know, almost like, is that almost taking, that should just be standard, right, shouldn't it?
Perhaps so. But, I mean, you can be commercially successful and kind of deep down hate what you're doing, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's definitely true. When are you touring the record?
So it's going to be end of May, early June. So to be honest, it's the dates are there. It's just there's some holes that need filling. But yeah, we're very much looking forward to announcing the tour.
How's it rooted, or is that?
So it'll be in the UK first, and then into Europe, and then if everything goes well, we'll be going to America in the autumn. Yeah, I mean, it's tough times out there, really, on the touring front. You know, you have a cost of living crisis, promoters, everybody wants to tour. And promoters, I don't know, they're a little bit more conservative, really. Well, in terms of taking risks on bands that maybe don't sell as many tickets as other ones, you know, they're always going to, if there's a challenge between two bands, I'm sure that their interest is to take something that they know is more safe in terms of tickets. Right. So, I mean, we're happy with the tour. Some of the venues are places we've always wanted to play. And and we're just so grateful, really, that it seems that even though we've been away, like the interest in the band hasn't really changed much. I mean, if anything, I'd say it feels like it's grown, which is, it's comforting.
Why do you think, I agree with you actually, but why do you think that is?
Because I think the records speak for themselves, really. As I said, we were never really a band that was pushed down people's throats. It kind of was this organic thing where, if someone who likes it tells a friend, and we've always been quite lucky that it seems that a lot of musicians like our music. So I think if you're in a house party or something, then sometimes the musician in the room, people listen to them when they have tips, maybe.
Okay. I think there's something very musical about your band without being overworthy. You know, it's like, I'm sure that a lot of the records that you like, I like, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, it doesn't feel kind of guitar center-esque, you know what I mean?
Like,
but at the same time, it's like, I think people, there's obviously a musicality to it.
Yeah, I hope so. I just hope that it has this kind of layers and depth to it. So, for instance, maybe why people still listen to the records is because they still find stuff in there that they maybe didn't notice in the past. I don't know. Who knows?
when's the record out?
It's 10th of March. Yeah, it'll be out. So it's we tried a bit of a different tactic. You know, it's so often now that people announce their albums with like 6-7 months, and I mean, I just find that so boring. Obviously, we're not big enough to just do like a drop, like a hip hop star or something, where you just announce the album. But
take it from me as well, as someone who writes about music, it's really irritating. I've had, like, when I was at the NME, it just felt like Radiohead did that like every couple of months, and you were like, okay, wicked, I'm pleased for you, but now I have to work really late, and you know, cheers, guys. But no, March 10th, that's exciting. I've only heard the two songs, but I really like them.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, we're looking forward to having it out there. And to be honest, with the other records, it's always felt like day one of the album in many ways is the day it comes out. Everything that has come from the album always comes after. You know, we've never been the sort of band that everything is in place months before. You know, the album and the music is very much the thing that everything comes from with us.
All right, well, listen, it's been so nice to chat, Reese, and good luck with it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah.
Well, that was a bonus episode of the James McMahon Music Podcast. Thanks to Reese for the chat. Thanks to Ben Ayres for hooking us up. The theme tune is by the band Jobbers. And I'll see you soon. Since it's a wreck in my happy New Year, I really love.